It was a soft, cold night, damp and clammy as a prom date's hands. The fog was thick, no wind around strong enough to muscle through it, so it clung to the cables, struts, and trusses, slowly turning into morning dew. Down below, Detective Mike Bolin leaned against the warm hood of his Pontiac and rolled a cigarette. The bridge was still new to everyone, only 4 years old and glittering like hope while so many brave men fought the Axis overseas. Mike liked to come here late when nobody else was around. It helped him clear his head. He unbuttoned his trench coat, put his fedora on the seat next to him, and drove back to his office. He'd been sleeping there lately. His apartment was in Haight, which had been going downhill faster than he could handle. Wasn't even safe to park the Streamliner there anymore. He stopped by the gin joint for a quick one, hoping to buy enough time until the newsies got their hands on the next day's racing forms. It was late, but not that late. So he went to the second floor walk-up he called an office, limping just a little to his left. 2 years ago, when he first hung up a shingle, he had been using a walking stick. Now the limp was barely noticeable. Bolin was about to unlock the door when he saw it standing a few inches open. There was cigar smoke and cologne wafting through the gap. Mike put away his keys and fondled the snub-nosed .38 he always kept in his pocket. He nudged the door open with his foot. There was a short, paunchy man waiting in the chair in front of his desk. "What's the big idea?" Mike growled. "Oh, finally. I was growing weary of waiting." "You're paying for that busted door, you know." "Happily. But first, I need to hire you to find someone."
"Come back business hours, pal."
"This cannot wait. You read in the papers about that girl they found the other night."
"The one all cut up from here to there?" "Yeah, I read."
"The man who killed her is still out there. He's killed before, and he'll do it again. I need you to find him for me. Mr. Bolin, in your years on the force, did you ever hear the term serial murderer?"
Drinking bathtub hooch in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters and mayhem, killers, cannibals and cults, fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales and terrifying truths. This is a Scary Home Companion.
Bolin closed the door and took his seat. "I'd offer you a drink, but I didn't catch your name," he said.
"Leo Gans. Perhaps you've heard of me."
Bolin raised an eyebrow. "Only secondhand, Mr. Gans. I don't frequent your type of establishments."
"You don't enjoy women?"
"Hey, what's that supposed to mean? I like broads, plenty. Of course I do. I just don't like to pay for it, see?"
"We all pay for it in one form or another, Mr. Bolin."
"I'll drink to that." He poured them each a glass of brown liquor. "Hope you like scotch, Mr. Gans."
"Is it double malt?"
"I forgot to count."
"You're quite glib, but I expected that. I have men outside in the car waiting for me, but felt it was best that we speak in private. I have asked around. People say you are a wiseacre, but a smart one. Your record with the Detective Bureau is exemplary. I've seen it myself. I dare say, without your unfortunate injury, you might have made chief of detectives."
Bolin put his drink down. "What's this history lesson got to do with the dead girl, Leo?"
"Do you know of serial murderers?"
"Not in so many words. But yeah, you mean
A mad dog, a real psycho, like that butcher in Cleveland.
Precisely. Someone who kills not for money or service, but for pleasure. Someone who will keep killing until they're stopped.
Mike rolled himself a smoke. What makes you so sure?
I'm not sure. It's just the only thing that makes sense. Still, just a theory. Which is why I am here.
You want me to test your theory? Well, I have to say, Leo, finding the biggest brothel keeper in the city waiting in my office was not how I expected my night to go. Why don't you tell it from the top?
Leo Gans owned a dozen different clubs, brothels, and bordellos throughout the Bay Area. A few months ago, he noticed a few girls had gone missing, more than was usual. So he started to ask around, all of his contemporaries, and they had noticed it in their businesses as well.
Working girls move on. It happens all the time, Boland said. It's part of working, ain't it?
Yes, it is. But not this many of them.
How many?
23 collectively.
Does this count the girl from the other day?
No, she wasn't one of ours.
Yeah, the papers said she was a cigarette girl, but that can mean a lot of things. I'm going to need to talk to everyone, Leo. Give me names and tell them I'm coming tomorrow.
You really think someone is killing their own girls?
Nah, doesn't make any sense. It'd be like burning your own money. It's crackers. But someone knows someone who knows something. So that's where I start. Before I can do that, we need to discuss my fee.
Leo took an envelope and slid it across the desk. There was $300 inside.
I trust this works as a retainer and will no doubt cover the cost of your door.
It wasn't until Mike had counted the money and put it in his desk that he said, So Leo, how does this end? Say I find this loony bird and what do I do? Take him to the police?
I would prefer not. They may be in on it somehow.
That's a wild accusation.
Let's just say I don't trust the police and leave it at that.
That may be the most sensible thing you've said tonight, Leo. I'll be happy to track this monster down for you. But I can't abide turning him over so you can just kill him.
And why would that be? You read what he did to that girl.
Him dying ain't the problem. Me being involved with it, that's the problem.
Have we reached an impasse?
Let me mull it over. Ask around. I'll call you tomorrow or the next day. I trust you can see yourself out.
Boland didn't open the agency the next morning. Hell, he didn't even see the next morning, sleeping in scandalously late on the couch he kept in the corner of his office. After a lunchtime breakfast of toasted tobacco and scrambled gin, he got his act together. There were three extra suits in the closet, two pair of shoes badly in need of a shine. He knotted his tie, put on his cufflinks, adjusted his hat, and greeted the bustling streets of San Francisco. It was going to be a busy day. He had places to go, people to see, hookers to research, and pimps to interview. Yeah, sure, they paid taxes. On paper, they all looked like square citizens. But off the page, they were a network of criminals running one of the biggest sex rackets in the state of California, which is saying something. But that was San Francisco for you.
the beauty and the ugly were both there in big screen Technicolor, sometimes on either side of the same street. Good people, safe neighborhoods, beautiful vistas, wide open spaces, but also bad apples, dangerous dandies, doomed dames, and dark alleys. Mike Bolan knew his way around both faces of the city. It was a long day. It was a hard day. Talking to pimps and shysters tired him out. It made his soul feel as chewed up and flat as a wad of gum on the bottom of a shoe. Sordid business. Mike never cared much one way or the other about the subject, but the older he got, the more he saw behind the scenes, the more ill at ease he got with it. He'd seen too many girls knocked around, knocked up, cast aside. Too many broken dolls hiding inside a bottle of booze or a vial of pills. Too many sent to jail, where their lives somehow managed to get even worse. Nah, that wasn't for him. None of this lifestyle was for him. But 300 clams was more than just walking around money. So he bit the bullet. He talked to the pimps. He asked the questions. He filled up his little notepad with names, ages, descriptions, dates. Probably wouldn't amount to nothing more than a hill of beans, but it was pro forma. He asked about the missing. He asked about enemies. He asked about cretins and weirdos harassing the working girls. It was well after sundown when he finished his round of interviews. He went back home in haste to shower and change, pound some coffee, and then he proceeded on to a much more pleasant task, going to the morgue. Mike never liked the morgue, but on a day like today, it was a step up. After stopping for some ham and eggs and a boiler maker, he made his way to St. Mary's in the dark corner of the basement where the bodies were kept, and the medical examiner did his gruesome work. Charlie wasn't the ME, just an assistant, but he and Mike went back, way back to his days on the force and before, and many favors were owed both ways. "Good to see you, Charlie." Charlie grunted, wrist deep in some poor schlub who took a dive off the Golden Gate. He nodded towards a desk in the back. There, Bolan found the file on the dead girl. He leaned against the desk and took it all in. His stomach, which was as strong as his jaw, lurched. The papers had left out a lot, and for good damn reason. "And we're sure this wasn't some animal. This poor dame was torn to bits." "Cut to bits, Mike. By an animal on two legs. Never seen anything like it. We had to put her back together again like a jigsaw puzzle. Say, what's your angle on all this?" "I can't tell you, Charlie, you know that. I was paid to snoop around. Now that I'm snooping, maybe I got a personal stake in this. It just don't sit right, does it? A man capable of something like this living in my town? Nah, it don't sit right at all." He finished the file and put it back. It was heavy on the gory details, but light on personal information. "Charlie, it says she was a cigarette girl. Doesn't say where she worked." "It's funny you mention that," Charlie said. He pulled his red hands free of the suicide and washed them in the sink. "That night, I heard the cops talking. They said they knew where she worked. Some place called the Zodiac Club. I thought it was a bit queer they chose to leave it out of the report." "A bit queer, to say the least. Thanks, Charlie. I owe you one." "You owe me another one. Next time, drinks are on me." There was no choice but to keep going and follow this hot lead. So Bolan went to the most exotic, exclusive, and infamous joint in the entire city. the Zodiac Club.
For almost a decade, the Zodiac Club was the place every high roller had heard about but could never find. It was whales only. Gambling, hooch, reefer, opium, broads, you name it. A full-service den of sin, where the valets wore suits and the goons wore tuxes. Mike knew where the club was from back on the force, but even then he had never stopped or tried to go inside. The scuttlebutt said the owner was connected to the top of the food chain, the chief, the mayor, the governor, and nothing could get you inside. Not a badge, not a warrant, not even a gun. With that in mind, Mike left his gun in the car and went to the service entrance around back, hat in hand. A big galoot in tails and gloves was barring the door. "Give this to your boss," Boland said, and forked over a business card. "Tell him I'm trying to find out who killed the cigarette girl." The monkey handed it off to another monkey. And two hand-rolled cigarettes later, Bolin was ushered inside, up a back stairwell, and into the second-floor office of the owner, who left him flabbergasted. Although he covered it up well enough, he was a modern man, after all, streetwise enough to have seen this kind of thing before, but the fact was, a woman owning and operating the Zodiac is a pretty big pill to swallow. "Good evening, madam," he said from the doorway. "Mr. Bolin, please make yourself comfortable. Would you care for a drink?"
"Care for one? I'd love it like the last girl that broke my heart."
"And what was her name?"
"Can't remember."
She poured him a drink and sat it next to him on a side table. This woman radiated elegance, from her string of pearls to her ankle-length gown. She looked to be made of porcelain, maybe in her 50s, maybe older, but not a wrinkle or crease to be seen. When she sat across from him, she put her hands over her bent knee, looking as regal as the queen herself. "We were all so distraught over poor Deirdre. And now Patrice. Please, detective, how can I help you?"
"Wait, you've got another missing girl."
"She has missed work for the last 2 days, and no one can raise her."
"Tell me about both of them. Addresses, friends. Were they seeing anybody? How long have they worked here?"
"I'll give you their addresses, and you can ask the other girls about their friends, or who they were with outside of work. I surely wouldn't know such a thing. They were my employees. Deirdre for 3 months, Patrice for, oh, what was it, 6.
"And they were both cigarette girls," he implied without implication.
"Something like that. Is it important what their job titles were?"
"It might be."
"Deirdre danced."
"And not the Charleston, I'm guessing." He rolled a cigarette. "Do you mind?"
"Most decidedly not," she answered, taking out a solid gold cigarette case of her own.
"Ladies first." Mike lit hers and then his.
"Tell me, did Deirdre have any enemies? Any trouble with any of the clients?" "Oh, yes, I believe so. I can't tell you much, but I remember one of my doormen telling me about an incident. Someone tried to pull Deirdre off the stage. Of course, he was immediately escorted out and roughed up just enough to teach him a lesson."
"And when was this?"
"A week ago? Perhaps 2. You can talk to the doorman himself."
"I'd like that. Maybe he can even give me a description."
"You think this might be the man who killed Deirdre?"
"It's a possibility. And I have to run down every last one until I find the right track."
"That's very methodical, Mr. Boland."
Can I ask who hired you?
You can ask anything you want.
Who hired you?
Sorry, Dollface. Client Dick confidentiality.
Very well. She produced a $50 bill from inside one of her long white gloves. Here. Now I'm a client.
Hiring me for what, exactly?
Mostly for the client Dick confidentiality. I don't like my name or the name of my club being bandied about with loose talk.
Well, that's just fine, because I don't even know your name.
Why? It's Madame Zodiac, of course. And you will have the discretion not to speak of any of this at all.
Of course I won't. I'm a professional.
I can tell. And I'm willing to pay you that amount 10 times over if you can find the man who did this and bring him to me.
500. That's a lot of scratch, madam. Care to tell me why you'd part with so much for an employee that you hardly knew?
She seemed delighted at his honest inquiry. Oh my, are all detectives this shrewd?
Only if they're any good.
Well, sir, although it may not seem like it to you, I consider us to be a family here. Deirdre didn't have any other family. Just us. So somebody has to do right by her.
He scratched his jaw, not sure if he was buying it.
Also, the other girls are scared. They're scared for Patrice. I need to show them that they are still protected, that I can protect them. They deserve that much.
He wasn't sure if he bought that either, but it played a lot better. The only thing he knew for sure was that there was something Madame Zodiac wasn't telling him.
The doormen at the Zodiac might have been thugs, but they were high-quality thugs. Dolan got more than a description of the troublemaker. He got a name. As they had been roughing him up, the goons also went through his wallet, taking whatever money he had, and finding out who he was. Irving Edmonds. By this time of night, Mike had no contacts awake enough to run down more intel on this dull, dizzy knucklehead. Since it had to wait, now was as good a time as any for some food and some shut-eye. But his dreams, they were no good, so he told sleep to shove off and was back on the beat by the time the sun peeked over the top of Tank Hill. He could have called in a favor, but he was flush with bribe money, so he bought what he needed from an inside source. Before noon, Bolin had the residential address of one Irving Edmonds, and a mugshot to go with it. From when he got popped on drunken disorderly 8 months back, Irving had been assaulting a hobo, and some sailors on shore leave put the boots to him and dragged him down to the precinct. So now Mike had a name, a face, and a place. He settled back into his seat, hat low on his brow, and watched the bungalow at the end of the lane. There were no signs of life, and there were plenty of neighbors and street traffic. He had to cool his heels until Irving showed his face, or until the sun went down. Mike had a quarter of a bottle of bathtub hooch under the seat, just to keep him company. And they passed the time together, real pals, through thick and thin, until it ran dry, and he was alone again. It was just after rush hour, as the sun was dipping low, when the front door of the bungalow opened and Irving Edmonds emerged. He looked like he had just woke up, hair and comb tied loose, one shoe dangling behind him, and he carried a valise with him. This was suspicious. Never trust a man carrying a valise.
Mike's plan had been to toss the place first, just to see if he needed to bother bracing this guy or not. But seeing how squirrely Irving looked, his hand was forced. Bolin watched as Irving hailed a cab, and then he started to tail them. Some 45 minutes later, the cab stopped, and the fare got out, still clutching that valise. By now, Bolin knew exactly where the freak was headed. The stink was in the air, thicker than cold molasses. They were just a few blocks out from Butchertown, the old meatpacking district, half abandoned and half blood-soaked. The perfect roost for a loony bird. Bolin had to ditch the car and follow on foot. He held back as much as he could, keeping his target at the edge of sight, which was tricky, because Irving was moving fast. Bolin caught sight of him as he pulled back a broken piece of fence, slid under the chain link, and made a beeline for a slaughterhouse. Once he was inside, Bolin followed him through. The building looked to be a few years unused, but was still well maintained. Too bad there weren't any windows for him to play Peeping Tom, so he circled the building, looking for any and all doors. Then he heard a yelp from inside. Not Irving, much higher pitched. A dame. The geek had someone else in there with him. There was no more time for subtlety. Bolin drew the .38 and burst into the slaughterhouse. There was a woman cuffed to a pipe on the wall. She looked ratty, dirty, dog-dead tired, like she'd been there for days. And maybe she had. Irving stood close to her, holding a thin, curved knife. But the weirdest thing was the camera. Up on a tripod, bigger than a bread box, a genuine movie camera. It wasn't running yet, but it was aimed at the girl and ready for lights and action to catch up. Irving turned to face the detective. Hold on there, Irving. Lay that pig sticker down, nice and easy-like. The man did as told, and Bolin cold-cocked him with the flat of his side iron. Then he released the girl and tied Irving up in her place. You must be Patrice. Your mother's been worried sick about you. Mike helped her to the door. Aside from a few bruises and small cuts, she seemed to be mostly uninjured. Run on home now. Let me handle this joker. Once they were alone, Bolin put on his old police gloves, the ones with lead shot sewn into the backs of them. Perfect for slapping information out of degenerates. And they still fit perfectly. What's the big idea? What did these poor girls ever do to you?
We're going to become stars together.
How many other girls have there been?
Just two. Deirdre was my first.
He slapped him again and again. It's closer to 20, 25. Say it.
No, Deirdre was my first. Deirdre was special. I wanted to make an impression on the producer.
Bolin took off the gloves. Irving's face looked like hamburger meat left in the sun too long, and he wasn't getting any less crazy. You kill them and film it? Is that what you do? That's the sickest thing I've ever heard, Irving. I'll enjoy seeing you behind bars. Alcatraz, yeah, that's the ticket. You'll be a big star in there.
No, Deirdre was practice. I had to run through it so that this time I could do it perfect. Pure movie magic.
How does a piece of chump change like you afford one of these cameras anyway? Irving pointed towards the back of the room at a storage unit with a steel door and
a handle that had been chopped through and pulled away. Behind that door were two more cameras, a bank of lights, and two small spotlights. There was sound equipment, too, like Irving had ripped off an entire movie studio. Mike rubbed his jaw. There was something he was missing. These pieces weren't fitting together flush. There were still gaps. So he went back in for another round of questioning. He lost track of time until the door opened and she came in. Madame Zodiac, dressed all in black, smoke dripping from her lips, with her goons at her back. "You work fast, Mr. Bolin," she said. She flicked her cigarette butt to the side, and one of the goons jumped on it, using a size 12 to grind it out. She looked at Irving. "Thanks for leaving something for the rest of us." At the sound of her voice, Irving became reinvigorated. He stood up, smiling through split lips with cracked teeth. "You're here!" He was beaming. "You've got some nerve, you little creep," she snapped. "You take two of my girls. You take my cameras, too? You're gonna wish I left you with Mr. Bolin." "Now, hold on a second," Mike snarled.
I just wanted to get your attention, Madame Zodiac. I wanted to audition for you. I can't sing, I can't act, but I can do this, and I can do it really well. Let me show you. I can be a star in your movies."
"What's he blathering on about? He says he didn't take those other girls, just your two."
The madam looked at Bolin and gave him a sad smile. "I'm so sorry about this, detective, but I've decided to go another way. Family is family, but business is business." The slapjack caught him flush, right behind the ear. Bolin stumbled. "The club isn't my only business. I also make movies. I've been making them for years. Of course, I can't use my own girls. That would be like burning my own money. Because there's no coming back from this trick." The goons rained boot heels down on him, and it was lights out.
"Okay, boys. Set up the other cameras and grab the spots. You. What's your name, young man?"
"Irving."
"Okay, Irving. You get your audition." She kicked his long curved knife closer to him. "When I say action, show me what you can do." The brutal, inhumanly savage murder of Detective Mike Bolin became the most popular movie Madame Zodiac had ever produced. It was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. And stay tuned, ladies and gents, because that is not the end of the story. Nor is it the beginning of the story. The roots of evil in San Francisco run dark and deep and lead to some surprising places. In the meantime, find the show on social media. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and, best of all, Reddit. Or contact the show directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. If you visit the show's Patreon page, you get extras, videos, games, giveaways, what have you. Best of all, you get the extra episodes. Roughly 3 seasons worth of bonus material, full-produced, amazing episodes you've never heard before, available only on Patreon. Give a few bucks a month to support indie horror and enjoy everything we have to offer. Scary Home Companion, /patreon.com. The music really accentuated the story this time around, didn't it? It was provided by Lisa Hammer with Jazzy Intrigue and Jazzy Inquisitors, Peter Hummel with Midnight Blues, and Lobo Loco with Phantom Hunters and Shadow Man. All of this music and tens of thousands of other songs and artists are available at freemusicarchive.com.